Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, we're starting the summer off with some poetry. Peter Cooley talks about his new collection, World Without Finishing, and Valentine Pierce previews her new book, Up to Cater. Peter Cooley is the former State Poet Laureate of Louisiana. He directs the creative writing program at Tulane University, where he's taught since 1975. Among his former students are such well-known writers as Baird Amos, Ellen Gilchrist, Catherine Soniat, Eric Trethewey, and Jennifer Gross. Today we're talking about his 10th book of poems, World Without Finishing. Peter Cooley, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
Now, 10 books. What a milestone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just look at them all lined up there and go, ah, oh, I've done it?
No, I really don't, actually. I'm always just thinking about the current one and the one to come, you know?
Of course, mm-hmm. Of course. Now, I have to ask you a really dumb question, mm-hmm. So just indulge me. Mm-hmm. But why did you call this, given the spiritual nature of the poems in the book, given a lot of the very spiritual language in the book,
mm-hmm.
why you called it World Without Finishing rather than World Without End?
I wanted, first of all, of course, the title was just chosen intuitively, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not by conscious thought. I mean, just as the poems are written intuitively and not by conscious thought. I mean, we're here to talk about them consciously, but they were intuitively created. I chose that title because I liked it.
That's fair enough.
But now I can analyze it. I mean, this indicates a dynamic process of the world instead of a world with a finite end, mm-hmm. right?
And so many of the poems don't finish. They end with a dash, or they end with an O.
Yes, they just end
in the middle of the line,
yes.
Which is lovely.
Yes, okay. I certainly, by going to school for many years, I was taught to have beginning, middles, and ends, but maybe we can dispense with a definite ending.
Right. Mm-hmm. That is a great contribution right there, Peter. Well, I'm going to ask you to read the title poem for us so we'll get a sense of what World Without Finishing is really like.
Okay. This poem was written, once again, simply written intuitively. It was written in response to the photograph in The Family of Man, the famous photography book, which came out some years ago. This is the last photograph in the book, and the photograph shows a little boy and girl walking off into the distance, and I've always been tremendously moved by the photograph. Also, it's interesting to me that this is the only ekphrastic poem, that is to say a poem in response to a work of art, the only ekphrastic poem I've ever written about a photograph, and I have no idea why. I just don't know why.
And you know, I remember this photograph.
Do you?
I remember that book so well.
Okay.
So,
yes, the book is so wonderful. And then under that photograph, there is a quote from Saint-Jean Pierce, "A world to be born under their footsteps." I thought it was just a fantastic beginning, which the photograph is enacting.
Mm-hmm.
World Without Finishing. At the end of The Family of Man, the last photograph, a boy and girl, probably siblings, 5 and 3 maybe, pose backs to us as they enter a forest in soft focus, the leaves silver, shivering, toward expectations beyond the scope of dawn. Beneath it, a world to be born under their footsteps, Saint-Jean Pierce. Reader, I wish I could speak to you without such illustration of what occurs to me at dawn now in my 70s, but this one image is what I turn to, stuporous and half awake, my aching hand about my coffee cup assurance, the body I am carrying is a gift, one I will give back after the last days. That we live again is certain, that our death is always imminent. This is the breath I draw, of faith recurrent, as the sun now dappling my back window, dappling my front at dusk. The children walk off. They are any one of us. Come back. They walk toward their death. Immortal, you and I, soon to be born, rush out to enter them again.
Ah, oh, Peter, thank you. So many of these poems are concerned with mourning. That's always been something that's been so important to you, mourning, light.
Yes.
I mean, it was fascinating to see all those poems.
Yes, yes. I mean, I write my poems in the morning, most of them, okay? I like the morning because it's a beginning. And I've said this many times before, the light here is very special. The New Orleans light is very special, and it's because of the humidity.
And you said before, that's partly why you moved here, why you wanted to live here.
For the humidity?
No. No one wants to live here for that. No,
I didn't know about the humidity.
But the light, the light.
The light, yes, the light, the light. Well, I wanted to get warm because I was so freezing cold in Wisconsin.
Right.
It was just enough to be warm for a moment. But to have a little sunshine.
Well, you've had plenty of
yeah,
sunshine.
I have plenty of it now.
Now, one of the things that fascinated me about this particular collection is that you have self-consciously identified the forms you're working on and experimenting with, like the obad, the morning poem, the ghazal, which is, you know, something I kind of knew about but wasn't deeply familiar with, and the zuahitsu, which fascinated me. So talk a little bit about that form. I had to look that up.
The zuahitsu?
Yes.
Well, it's Japanese, and a lot of, I guess, not many American poets would use it. Kamiko Han got me onto it. The Japanese poet who was a colleague of my daughter's at Queens College. Anyway, just to go back to the fact that what you said is interesting. I mean, I do self-consciously identify the form so the reader is ready for what's happening. There's no point in disguising it. The zuahitsu is this Japanese form into which one can, in some way, pour almost anything. And you can pour prose into it and mix prose up with poetry. By having numbered sections as you do, you can play with time and have things that are continuous and discontinuous out of time. You can really have fun with that form.
And it reads so easily. It's like a list.
Yes, it is. It's very inviting. Okay. That was, I asked Kamiko what to do, and she said, think lists.
Ah.
Think lists if to write your zuahitsu. Okay.
And you have two of those in this
Yes,
book.
I do.
You also have in this collection a lot of poems that are responses to works of art, particularly Mary Cassatt, Michelangelo, Rembrandt, Rodin. I mean, those are obviously very important to you. So talk a little bit about writing those poems.
Well, those are some of my favorite artists. And I what I wanted to do is mix those poems in with the other poems here. Instead of having a single book on an artist, I wrote the Van Gogh notebook, and it was all about Van Gogh.
Right.
And then I thought to myself, I think the world really doesn't need a book with all Rodin poems in it, but why not mix them in with other poems? You're always returning to the same themes anyway.
And you've written some of these poems from the viewpoints of the subjects of these works of art,
Which the is speaking
so
subject. And I would say this gives the poet the opportunity to do what the fiction writer can do all the time.
Now, you've divided this collection into four parts, and as I read it, I can feel a kind of rhythm to it. I mean, I can't quite articulate what the four parts really are, but I'm always fascinated by how poets know a collection is ready and how they arrange it and that whole process of putting it together. So what is that like for you?
I have certain thoughts about that, definitely. I put the book together, not this last summer, the summer before that, but the summer before that, I thought I have enough poems and I have an idea of what I want to do with the ekphrastic poems, the works of art, plus these other spiritual poems and so on. I will finish my book this summer. So I had the month of July off and I thought, now this is how I wrote my, I did a dissertation book of poems at Iowa. That was my, for my PhD. This is how I did it many years ago at Iowa, so I've done it ever since the same way. I take all the poems out and put them out on the floor, and then I walk around them. So they're like mosaics.
Ah.
Okay, and I do that partially. Or then I go in a room in our house, like my son's room, he doesn't live at home anymore, and I take the poems and I put them around on pieces of furniture so I can look at them. So they are like works of art on the wall, or they're mosaics on the floor, okay? Well, then, 3 years ago, I had that process. I devoted the month of July to it. It wouldn't work. I couldn't do it. It wouldn't work. No, you can't force these things. You just can't force the things. It just wouldn't work. And I don't know why. Okay. And I said, okay, that's what are we going to do if it's not going to work? Now, but at the same time, I thought, it's going to work later. It's just don't push it. Mm-hmm. Just don't push it. Okay. It's going to work later. You have the book, you have the poems. Okay. The next year I came back, 1 year later, I came back in July. I took the month of July off. I started with the arrangement, and I thought, it's working. It's dynamic. I can see it. And I had all different arrangements. I had an arrangement in the master bedroom. I had an arrangement in Josh's room. I had an arrangement in my study. I had an arrangement out in the blue room. Okay, all these different books around our house, okay? And that was so much fun. And you could go into the blue room and see one version of the book, and go into the study and see another version of the book. And one of these I chose, and I can't remember which room I chose, but it worked. It's an intuitive process, you know.
I think in future you should label sections like the blue room.
Oh, the blue room, the blue room, Josh's room. Okay.
That would be great. That's how I arrange my books, by room. I have like little islands of organization room by
room. Oh, okay. Well, then you understand exactly.
A little bit. But also I do think it helps us to think of poems as visual works of art on the page. I mean, I have framed poems all over my house. Because I like to be made to stop and read them, you know, and see them framed.
Yes.
It makes a kind of difference.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So,
uh-huh.
Well, I want to ask you to read one more poem for us that I really, really like.
Okay.
And it's called Spirit Dog, Etc.
Why do you like this poem?
I just do.
That's my kind of answer.
It was fun to read aloud.
Well, this poem was written, I got the first line, and I got the last line. And then I had to find a poem to put in between.
You make this sound like such hard work.
No. It's fun and intuition. No. I said it's fun. Guzzles aren't fun for me, but this was totally fun. Finding the poem was fun. No. And also what interested me is that I could break up the stanzas and they're all different lengths. The first one is 4 lines, then 3 lines, then 2 lines, then 1 line, then 3 lines, then 1 line, then 1 line. I could just have fun that way.
Yeah.
Spirit dog, etc. I'll have these days when I begin again. Come back as a mockingbird in the live oak. The feral cat under your house at night. The crone who lives beneath the underpass. I'll be without this body. I'll be stars no one has seen yet. Illuminations walking backwards, their faces turned toward you. I'll be on fire. I'll be the moon. That hue the flowers in your yard assume at night. I'll be all immortality, won't I? I won't be Peter you recognize. I'll be such winds as can befriend the air, walking beside us always, spirit dog. I repeat, I'll be immortality. It's only saying this that I begin to live.
Ah, see, who could not love that poem, Peter? Who hasn't thought, what would I be? What beautiful thing would I be? So are you hard at work on the next book already?
Well, I mean, this just came out February 11th.
So, I know, but you put it away for a year.
Yeah, that's true. No, I have glimmerings of what the next book could be about in some ways.
Good. That's a word about light. That is
that's
typical
a word,
of
that
you.
That is, yes. I don't want to formulated as if I knew what I was doing, because I do believe it's an intuitive process, right?
Peter Cooley loves light. That is one thing
we
know.
Oh, I do. Yes.
That's why you have all those lamps in your office.
Oh, yes. The photographer picked up on that. I have a lot of lamps at home, too, but I guess I have 8 lamps in my office.
See? Mm-hmm. That's a sign of a poet, I think. All right. We've been talking with former State Poet Laureate Peter Cooley about his new book, World Without Finishing. Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Valentine Pierce is a New Orleans native of many, many talents. She's a poet, a spoken word artist, a singer, an actress, a talented craftsperson. Her gifts are multitudinous. Today we're talking about her new book of poems, and it's called Up Decatur. Valentine, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Well, it is so good to be here.
Now, this book covers a lot of ground for you, both personally and politically, doesn't it?
It does. And it was not intended. I had another book in the works. That book is still in the works because this book demanded it. When I walked up Decatur into one of the Take Down the Statues rallies, really afraid that Nazis were going to be there.
Well, that's a very incredible poem. It's a little long to read on the air, unfortunately.
Oh, yes.
But it was so important when you write about just the way you move through your own city and you have a goal in mind and just your participation in that rally and the feeling of validation that you got from it.
Yes. And the fear of walking into it by myself.
Yeah, I know, but you did it. So did you write that immediately after that rally? Did you have to think about it a little bit, or did it just flow?
You know, sometimes poems, they just, I think it was writing itself on my way back. Because I think I wrote it like right after. I worked on it for days. I was just writing and writing it. Mm-hmm. You know, but a lot of times they just flow, and then the writing is actually rewriting, correcting the little words you couldn't find in your head when you're in that moment, you know.
And because it's political, because there's so much about politics in this collection, I thought I might ask you to read the poem, What Shall I Tell My Son? Because it's such an important poem for all parents.
Okay. The funny thing is, for years I never saw myself as political. I wasn't into the political anything. Somehow I guess I grew into it, or it dawned on me that I have to be in it or just give up altogether.
You change. Times change.
That's one of the reasons I'm back in New Orleans. This is my... They're like, you're coming back already? I'm like, this is my city.
You are back.
This is my city. If I don't claim it, who will claim it?
Right.
Okay, now, of course, this is related to, you know, all the incidents that happened with killing young black males.
Right.
Since I raised a young black male, I have a very high concern about it. So I wrote this poem, and I sent it to my friend. That's why it says, thanks to Bobby Flowers.
Yes.
Because he responded to it, and I edited what he responded and added it to the poem. What shall I tell my son now that they've acquitted George Zimmerman? Trayvon Martin died because he was caught in a neighborhood where he shouldn't have walked. So, son, don't have such a purposeful stride. Don't move with confidence and pride. I know this sounds insane, but stay hoodless in the pouring rain. Because your black skin is a crime, and I don't want you doing time behind the steel bars of a prison or beneath a headstone from which you will not be risen. And my friend Bobby Flowers sent back, tell your son, history is shaded by the memoirs of the conqueror. Tell him to keep his purposeful stride, continue to move with confidence and pride. Tell him, if confronted, redirect opposing force rather than inflict pain. Inflict pain rather than break. Break rather than maim. Maim rather than use deadly force. Deadly force is a last resort. Above all else, once in the fight, win. Be the one to tell the story.
I love the ending of that poem. I love that. That is so triumphant, you
know?
Thank you. Oh, now you've experienced so much loss during the writing of this book. I mean, sometimes I think, how are you still standing? I mean, you've lost so many people in just a brief period of time. So how was it to write about that?
Well,
is that the way you process grief?
Yes and no. Like right now, I'm not really writing a lot, and the stuff I write is just not stuff I would like to share.
Mm-hmm.
But my entire life, I've processed my life through writing.
Uh-huh.
It's like I was born this way. The writing is what helps to keep me sane. But along with the writing, I'm going to tell you, I have pillars of friends. And without them, I'm going to tell you, I really don't know where I would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's 10 people in the last 5 years.
That's so much loss, Valentine. It's really unbearable.
And the list is long, some family and some friends who were like family.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a rough road.
So, of course, a lot of these poems are about grief. And
yes,
that's something we all come to eventually. And one of the poems that moved me the most is Grief Reflections, because I think everybody comes to the moment in this poem. And it's so powerful. I remember reading it, and it just, I had to close the book for a while and think about it for a long time. So I wonder, could you read that one?
I could read that one. The funny thing is, if you don't mind me saying this, this poem started out because somebody stole my car.
Oh, no.
That's how this all came about. They stole my car the week I buried my youngest sister.
Oh, Valentine.
And there were so many things in my car.
Yeah.
You know, tools, gifts like leather gloves from my daughter. And to me, it was like grief on grief.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got me $400 in tickets. So I was like, okay. And my niece died the week after my daughter. I'm thinking, my car is my chariot.
Yes.
I was like, how am I going to make it through these moments?
Yeah, I'm sure you're thinking, universe, if you got it in for me, too.
I did a poem on that, too, because I was like, I've tried to be good all my life, so why am I being punished? That's what I really felt. People don't like to say that. You know, they don't like to say, it's not a pity party. It's a lot of trauma. And you're thinking
true.
To yourself, oh, my God, you know, I got to survive. So this is called Grief Reflections. Grief takes a seat, I say. I have nothing. Tell death 8 and 4 years is plenty. Too many for one lifetime. Grief says, your music collection. Eclectic, diverse, decades of songs, a life's worth. Your jacket, glorious purple. Mountains, majesty, blue leather gloves your daughter gave you, carried around because she gave them to you. Your hat. Sassy, sexy, strong, powerful, your daughter's tools. Carried around not just because, but because they were hers. He lists everything I lost. Finally gets to your car, your dream chaser chariot, the soaring eagle's wings. But more than all of this, the sense deep inside that you are safe. I look at grief. Then I weep.
That's so true. It's like that moment when C.S. Lewis says in A Grief Observed, he said, nobody ever told me that grief felt so much like fear. You know?
Yes.
But lest we think this is all sadness, all politics, because it's you, it's not. Because
it's
there's
not.
Such resilience and liveliness and humor. I wonder if we could close with a very funny poem called Breaking Tradition that made me laugh out loud the first time I read it.
And as you know, my poems are very real life.
Yes, they are.
I was having a conversation with a friend, and he's African, and he's explaining to me, you know, African culture and stuff, and I'm thinking, like, okay. So, Breaking Tradition. He tells me that in Africa, a man can have 3 wives. For a second or two, I try to pretend that I am not surprised. After all, I did know this. I learned it once. A geography lesson on worlds beyond my imagination. Places I could neither see nor touch. I guess that's why I didn't see the need to consciously remember it. But I can't help myself. I say, 3 wives? I couldn't do it. I'd be too jealous. Jealous, he says in earnest. Of what? Of what? Of 2 other women loving my man. Before I could explain my concept of that whole complexity of loving, he reminds me. 1 wife is a Western tradition. 1 wife and 2 mistresses. 3 wives, 2 divorces, alimony. All the hardships of communal life and none of the benefits. Wonder if I could move to Africa and have 3 husbands.
I wish people could see your face when you read that poem. It's so funny. Oh, God, Valentine, oh, that just makes me so happy.
I think all my poetry is actually in my face sometimes.
Well, a lot of it is.
It's like right there.
I feel very lucky to see it. We've been talking with New Orleans poet Valentine Pierce, whose new book is Up Decatur. Valentine, thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Loan me your husband, and I will loan you mine. Loan me your husband, and I will loan you mine.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Susan Eady signs her baby book, Poppy's Best Babies, Sunday, June 3rd at 2 at Octavia Books. The Graphic Novel Book Club discusses Paper Girls, Volume 4 by Brian K. Vaughan and Sandman, Volume 1 by Neil Gaiman, Monday, June 4th at 6 at Tubby & Coo's Mid-City Bookshop. Claire LeGrand discusses and signs Furyborn, the first book in her Imperium trilogy, Wednesday, June 6th at 5 at Octavia Books. Robert Fiesler discusses and signs Tinderbox, the untold story of the upstairs lounge fire and the rise of gay liberation, Wednesday, June 6th at 6 at the annual meeting of the LGBT Archives Project of Louisiana. That's at the Marigny Opera House, 725 Ferdinand Street. Richard Rowley discusses and signs Keys and Keynotes, Thursday, June 7th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Romney Petit and Laurel Holden discuss and sign The Girl Who Spoke with Spiders, Friday, June 8th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. The Science Fiction Book Club discusses Fat White Vampire Blues by Andrew Fox, Saturday, June 9th at 10:30 at Octavia Books. Poet is a Verb, How Poets Drive Change is an open workshop for teen writers conducted by Valentine Pierce. That takes place Saturdays at 2 at Alvar Library. Patsy Burdine appears with her dog Mo to discuss and sign her children's books, Miracle of Mo and Stella and Mo's Big Adventure, Sunday, June 10th at 2 at Garden District Bookshop. And summer reading programs are getting underway at area libraries, and they have something to offer all readers, children, teens, and adults. Check out your local branch for the latest. And coming up later this month, the American Library Association meets here in New Orleans, June 21st through 26th. For information, check out ala.org. Featured speakers include former First Lady Michelle Obama at the opening ceremony, actress Viola Davis at the closing ceremony, poet laureate Tracy K. Smith and poet Jose Antonio Vargas, biographer Jonathan Eig, journalist Robert Fiesler, actress Sally Field, historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, librarian of Congress Carla Hayden, and national archivist Richard Ferrero. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.